Chapter 38. Nora gazes out over a sea of people. Thousands of them have gathered here in the plaza to see Chancellor Mon Mothma speak and to hear the stories of those liberated from the prison on Kashyyyk. Next to Nora stands Brenton. She grabs for his hand and gives it a little squeeze and finds his palm slick with sweat. He looks pale. He bites at his lip and stares out over the crowd, but not at the crowd. Rather, he's gazing out at a fixed point in the precise middle of nowhere. She fears she looks the same. A host of emotions runs through her. Anxiety at having to speak in front of a crowd. The certainty that when she does, she will probably throw up all over her formal naval attire. And finally, worry over Temin, because he's still not here. And that means he may truly be angry with her. It's not just them on the stage. The Chancellor has stepped out in front of dozens of those liberated from Golas Aram's strange prison ship. And other officials have come too. Senators, generals, admirals. She doesn't see Akbar present, but she does see Commodore Augate, whose face wears that trademark pride and sorrow, both born of war. Nora thinks that she sees General Madine on the end, and next to him, the senator from Chandrila, Derm Harmodius. Quite the company she's keeping. After all, she is a deserter. If she looks over the sea of faces, the plaza is ringed in by the white cliff-like buildings of the Hana city center, and beyond that, the sea. Dead ahead is a series of dark lines, balconies climbing the old gather house like a ladder, all reserved for diplomats, senators, and other emissaries so they can view the day's celebrations. At the very top, she sees the balcony reserved for the Imperial monster, Admiral Ray Sloan. Nora tries not to think about her. She tries not to think about any of it. Not that woman, not Temin, not how she feels like she needs to run away before she pukes. Mon Mothma steps up, flanked by her two advisors, the Togruta Oxy Cray Corbin and the Chandrillan man Hostis Idge. On each side and over the heads of the crowd float cam droids, hololenses extended, some snapping static shots with blue flashes, others capturing events as they unfold. Nora tries not to look at those. Mon Mothma steps up to an old stone podium. It's chalky and white, crumbling around the edges, but still surviving the ages.
Hello, Chandrila. Hello, New Republic. And greetings to the galaxy beyond. I am Chancellor Mon Mothma.
Applause erupts. The applause roars, and Temin yells over it to the guard blocking his way into the plaza.
I need to see my mom. She's on stage.
Behind him, Mr. Bones sways back and forth, impatient.
Plaza's full, the guard says as the crowd dies down. You're going to have to wait.
I can't wait. This is important.
I'm sure it is.
Here, the guard steps forward, pushing Temin back a little.
And even still, it's going to have to wait, kid.
I'm not a... Never mind that. People may be in danger.
That is an assessment he makes, though he doesn't really know that it's true. He does know that something is up, though. And danger is usually the outcome of this kind of mystery.
Please!
Danger, huh?
The guard pulls a baton off his leg. Its white tip sparks blue. It's a shock lance. He thrusts it toward Temin. Not to hit him, but to threaten him with it.
Step back, kid, or I'll use...
A whine of servo motors fills the air as Mr. Bones dances forward, grabbing the guard's arm and twisting it upward. The shock lance jabs hard under the man's golden helmet. The man cries out, stuttering as he falls. His heels twitch and jump against the ground, though the rest of him is still.
Uh-oh,
Temin says.
Threat to Master Tamen neutralized.
At least you didn't kill him.
From behind them, shouts reach Temen's ears. And sure enough, here comes a trio of guards. Two with shock lances, one with a blaster.
Come on, Bones!
Mon Mothma speaks.
The citizens on this stage represent the best the galaxy has to offer. Many of them are the original architects of the rebellion, an alliance of right-minded, freedom-seeking worlds who wanted all of us liberated from the leash and collar of an empire that subjugated countless systems, maintaining order through brute force and callous autocracy. That time is over, and the Empire's edge has gone dull.
More applause. Out there in the crowd, Nora sees movement. Her pilot's eye is trained to see such things. In the deep black of space, it's vital to know what light is a star and what is an enemy ship coming out of light speed. Here, it's like seeing a tremor in the gathered throng. She can't quite make out what's happening, but she spies the jostled bodies and the turning heads. The Chancellor continues.
Slowly but surely, the Empire is being pushed back. Planet by planet, system by system. Its time is dwindling, and where it crumbles, the New Republic rises from the ruin to collect the pieces and rebuild what they had damaged. And note that I say damaged, not destroyed. The Empire left us reeling, yes, but what they did was not permanent. The way is not shut. The path forward is clear, and it is ours.
There, someone is cutting through the crowd. She spies the golden helmets of the Senate Guard following after. Wait, it's not someone cutting through the crowd. It's two people. One of them isn't a person. It's a droid. A droid she recognizes. Mr. Bones. Oh, no, 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 no. Not now, Tamen. What have you done? Now she sees him, too. The tousle of hair and a topknot. He looks to her. Their eyes meet. He's yelling something and waving his arms about, but it doesn't matter. The applause is thunderous again. A vibrant roar that swallows all other sound. Sloane stares out over the balcony's edge, her elbows down, her chin resting on steepled fingers. The Chancellor goes on and on. Freedom this, democracy that. Never once acknowledging that the greatest threat the galaxy faces is not from Imperial order, but from its absence. All she can do is hope that the attack will soon commence. She knows Rax will be watching. This entire monkey show is being broadcast across the Holonet. Her jaw tightens, and she prays he has this under control. Commence attack already, she wishes, as if her thoughts can be broadcast through time and through space. The time is now.
We have lost many along the way, but today is not a look back at what we've sacrificed, but a look forward to the future,
Mon Mothma says.
A future that we now possess, thanks to those liberated from the Imperial Blacksite prison. Heroes like Garel's once governor, Jonda J. Tolwar, the Surgeon Council of Hosnian Prime, Plas Lealcott, who helped hide Imperial refugees in his own chateau. The radio operator, Brenton Wexley, from Akiva, who single-handedly transmitted our message across the Outer Rim, and whose own wife, Nora, led the team to rescue him and all these others.
Nora hears her name, but it's a distant sound. A noise lost to the weight of deep water. All she can do is watch her son struggle against the tide of people. She snaps out of it and turns to Brenton to tell him, but
What she sees makes no sense. Brenton has his arm up and extended out. In his hand, a small pistol. A three-shot holdout blaster. He points it right at Chancellor Mon Mothma. Nora screams and grabs his arm, yanking it upward. But it's too late. The blaster fires. No! Temin sees his own father draw something. A matte black pistol, small and concealable. As he points it at the Chancellor, Temin sees that his father is not alone. All the liberated captives have them. His mother sees it too. She grabs for the gun. It goes off, just as someone tackles Temin. Pain coruscates through him as one of the batons jabs hard into his side. His teeth clack, and his tongue feels thick. For a few moments, his body seems like nothing more than a sack of meat, and the guard flips him over. Bones grabs the guard and flings him backward like he's not much more than an old ratty puppet doll. Two more guards advance, and Bones meets them, blades out. A flash of white cloth, and the Chancellor falls. Nora twists Brenton's arm upward so that he can't fire another shot, and he spins to meet her. His face is a mask of horror. It's as if he can't believe what he just did. His mouth is open in a hopeless O, eyes glistening with tears. He mouths, "I'm sorry." Then he drives a knee into her stomach. "Brenton!" she cries. He slams the gun down on the back of her head, and she drops. Nora rolls over, groaning. The stage is chaos. She realizes now, only too late, how her husband is not alone in his act. The other captives also have pistols up and out, and they're firing at those gathered on stage and into the crowd. Searing bolts cross open space. Someone falls near her. One of the Chancellor's own advisors, Hostis, drops hard on his side, a serpent of smoke rising from a cooked hole in his head. Nora strains to look around her. Brenton is nowhere. Panic is everywhere. One of the liberated steps in front of her. It's the first one the Chancellor mentioned. Jonda J. Talwar. A tall woman with white hair. Her face is a mask of unrecognizable rage as she fires into the crowd. Nora grabs the woman's leg and yanks hard. The traitor cries out and drops onto her back, the air blasting out of her lungs. It takes little effort to twist the pistol out of her grip. On the woman's face, an odd moment of clarity passes in front, like a cloud clearing away from the sun. She says something, something that's hard to hear over the sound of blasters and screams and thundering crowds. Something that might be,
"What have I done?"
Nora doesn't know how to answer her. The only answer she can supply is a straight fist to the woman's nose. Jay Talwar's eyes flutter, and she goes unconscious. Nora gets up, then almost falls. A fresh starburst of pain radiates out from the base of her skull, where Brenton hit her. Her vision goes double, then triple, then blurry once more. Ahead, she sees a white, crumpled shape. Mon Mothma, still on the ground. And ahead is Commodore Augate, wrestling with one of the liberated. A Rhodian man waving a pistol. Nora staggers toward them. The pistol goes off. Augate's head snaps back. She screams, rocking hard against the podium, as the Rhodian man lifts the gun, aiming to finish the job. Nora now recognizes him as Ezdo, once a senator's aide from Coruscant, before ending up locked away in that prison ship. She rushes him, slamming him back. He falls. She kicks the gun away. Augate is clutching at her face. Between the fingers, Nora sees the dark char and blistered skin. "Go!" Augate hisses. "Get clear!" Nora nods.
Ahead, she sees the Togruta woman, Oxy, helping Mon Mothma up. She's not dead, Mona thinks. A small bit of good news on this dire, dread day. The Chancellor's shoulder is wet with red.
Guards swarm the stage, firing stun blasts at the scattering liberated captives.
Mona doesn't see Brenton anywhere. She needs to find him. Now!
The epiphany that Sloane experiences is not one she expects, nor is it one she desires. As she watches the events unfold down below her balcony, she realizes grimly, this is the attack Rax was planning. His fingerprints are all over it. How, she doesn't know. These rebels who returned from the prison have been programmed in some way, turned into traitors, changed into killers. It is genius. And it disgusts her. She says as much to Adia, standing behind her, even as Sloane cannot tear her eyes away from the chaos below.
This is not war,
she says, her voice drawn out and ragged.
This is not battle. This is something else.
A test,
says a small voice inside her.
This is not how we conduct ourselves. This is how they do it. Insurgency and terror.
These were not the events Sloane figured she would witness today.
Where are the ships? Where is her fleet scouring Chandrilla with sacred Imperial fire?
But here it is, and deal with it she must. Mothma left her and Adia up here with a guard contingent, treating Sloane like an honored guest, but still taking precautions. Sloane turns. 5 new Republic guards remain, and 2 of her own, the red-cloaked royal guardsmen, stand silent and still. Adia hovers nearby, trembling just slightly. To the 2 royal guards, Sloane gives a gentle nod. The guards of the New Republic have no chance. Those picked to serve Palpatine and wear the elite red cloaks are blank soldiers, filled only with the knowledge of how to defend and how to kill. A swoosh of their cloaks and a spin of the blades, and in less than 10 seconds, the bodies of the fallen Republic guards litter the floor. Sloane tells those red cloaks,
go, clear the way and secure my ship. Adia and I will be along shortly thereafter.
They say nothing. They do not even offer a nod. They simply do as commanded.
We need a plan,
Sloane says to Adia.
As you said, the guards will clear the way.
No,
Sloane says with a sharp rebuke.
A larger plan. This aberration of an attack must not become our dominant mode of doing business, Adia. We must deal with Rax quickly, mercilessly. If he is given time, he will spin this as only he can. He will attempt to convince the others that it was sensible, a necessary evil.
What if they do? Surely the New Republic will be left reeling.
Sloane turns and again looks out over the balcony. Now she sees guards swarming the stage. The Chancellor is up and disappearing in a circle of protectors. So, Mon Mothma is alive. Good. That woman must not die. She must kneel in fealty. That is the only fate Sloane will accept for the foolish Chancellor.
Don't be seduced by Rax, Sloane says, still watching below.
Madness has seized the crowd beyond. I was. Temporary idiocy on my part. I became complacent. And now, this happened. We should have brought the fleet. We need to demonstrate martial ability. The Empire is a hammer striking down disorder, not a knife slipped between unsuspecting ribs. Rax must be arrested, and then executed. I will be the one to do it.
Adia says nothing. The silence from her is deafening. And then comes the second unwanted epiphany.
Adia,
Sloane says, turning toward her assistant.
Her assistant stands there, one of the guard's own blaster rifles in her hand. Its barrel points right at Sloane's head. Adia isn't trembling anymore. She is firm-footed and sure of her actions. Sloane sighs.
Not her. Please, not her. I'm too late, aren't I? We were both fools, Adia.
Rax is the way forward. The Empire must be willing to change. We must be willing to do anything to show the galaxy what it is to defy us.
Don't point that weapon at me, Adia.
This was a test. He wanted you to embrace it, to see things his way. It didn't have to be like this. You could have helped him rule, and I would be with you both, helping reshape the Empire and the galaxy beyond.
I do not want the Empire reshaped by his hands. And I don't want you reshaped by him either. We worked well together, you and I. You trusted in my vision, didn't you?
Now, though she understands, Adia has been betraying her all along, hasn't she? Giving intel on her to Rax. It's how he knew where she was on Coruscant. How he knew about her meeting with Mos Amida. About everything. Maybe there's still hope.
Put that rifle down.
I'll give you no more chances, Adia. Put it down. But Adia does no such thing. She is resolute. She is his.
So be it.
Sloane faints left, then moves right. Adia isn't combat trained. The rifle follows Sloane's first movement and fires. The blaster bolt tears through the space where Sloane was moments before. Sloane drives a fist into Adia's kidneys. The girl cries out, tries to wheel on Sloane with the rifle, which is exactly the wrong thing to do. Sloane easily pivots the weapon out of the girl's hands and fires a bolt, point blank into her chest.
Adia's eyes go wide, and in them, Sloane sees a young woman she trusted.
A woman she thought could have been her daughter in another lifetime.
Adia's lips work soundlessly. She falls.
Sloane takes a moment. And in that moment, rage surges through her like acid.
I am going to kill Gallius Rax.
Sloane leaves the room, rifle in her hand.
Brenton!
Nora fights against the crowd. They're panicked. They should be. She is too. From somewhere she hears someone weeping. Then more blaster fire. She tries to imagine what happened, and what is happening even still. But she can't get her head around it. To see these captives held up on a well-deserved pedestal, only to turn around and attack, is incomprehensible.
Brenton!
Her husband is part of it. He tried to assassinate the Chancellor. Who else would he have attacked if she hadn't stopped him? And where did he go?
She has to find him. To stop him, yes, but also to understand what happened.
To look in his eyes once more and try to find out if the man who did this thing is still her husband, or if her husband is even there at all.
Brenton, why?
She fights her way across the plaza, looking for her husband, but also looking for her son. Temin knew. He tried to warn her.
Now, where is he? Get higher.
She's a pilot. She needs height, like a falcon scouting for prey. She pushes her way through to the old gather house, then laps a couple of steps,
almost running out of breath as she does.
She sees a body in the hall, an Odigan senator. Eyes as glassy and dead as a droid's.
That means more captives were here too, doesn't it?
Of course they were. They weren't all on stage. Some of them were probably here, watching, waiting. Nora moves on. Nothing to be done here. She finds her way to one of the now empty terraces. The crowd has already started to disperse below, and the guards are locking down the plaza.
Good.
Hopefully they'll catch as many of these people as they can. Someone needs to get answers. And then, Nora sees him. Brenton Wexley, to the far right of the plaza. He's crossing one of the sky bridges, heading in the direction of the landing platforms. Nora grits her teeth and moves in that direction.
Stop!
Temin stands behind his father as the man flees to the end of the sky bridge. Beyond, hundreds of landing platforms ring the far side of Hana City, and beyond them waits the sea. His father, pistol still in hand, freezes. Temin has no weapon. He's alone, too. Bones is gone, left back in the crowd to distract the guards so that Temin could flee. Slowly, Brenton turns around.
Tim,
Dad says. It sounds like Dad. His voice wavers.
Mom was right. You aren't you.
I am. But...
His father's words die on the vine before bearing fruit. He just stands there. Then he slowly raises the pistol. Almost as if he doesn't want to. As if something is lifting his arm. An invisible string tugging on his wrist. Or maybe Temin is just imagining that. Maybe Dad wants to kill him. Either way, Temin stands there, chin up and out, trying not to cry and failing miserably because he feels his cheeks tighten and his eyes go wet. He has no weapon to point, so instead, he points an accusing finger.
You killed people!
Don't say that!
You did! You're the Empire. Were you always? Was it all just a lie? Playing the good guys so we didn't know how bad you were?
No! No! I was... I never...
Shoot me. Go ahead. You shot me once.
The gun wavers. Brenton fights against it. The struggle is plain on his face, like he's battling himself. The pistol shakes violently in his hand as the arm bends at the elbow, slowly pointing the gun at his own head.
No!
Temin cries, bolting hard across the open space. He leaps, tackling his father as the blaster goes off. The gun clatters against the empty bridge. Brenton stares up at him with empty eyes.
No, 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 don't die!
Those eyes blink. Oh, the shot missed. Temin got there in time, and now Brenton is alive. His father cries out and pistons a fist into Temin's stomach. He shoves the boy off him and then flees, leaving his son behind, gasping for air and sobbing there on the sky bridge.
Dad.
The guard with a cresting wave of blonde hair and a little scar on the bottom of his chin stands there, staring down. Yup Tashu, once advisor to Emperor Palpatine, looks up, his chin slick with his own spit.
Hello, guard,
Tashu says, mush-mouthed. The guard drops the gate, keeping Tashu imprisoned.
Here to kill me?
Tashu asks. Then his words dissolve into mad laughter. His laughter becomes coughing, his body racked with spasms until he's left curled into a ball. He gasps for air and then says,
I heard blaster fire. You heard correctly, but you are not a target. Then what am I? A free man.
More laughter rises out of him, and more lung spasms after.
The darkness has saved me. Long have I pleaded with it. You may go. There is a ship waiting. Docking platform E-22. And the other guests? Shale, and Crassus, and Pandion? Pandion died, you fool. And now the others have joined him.
Tashu stands on quaking bird legs.
You murdered them?
I did.
Why?
Because I was told to. Just as I was told to free you.
And who told you this, God?
Our new emperor. You are to serve him now.
Tashu's lip quivers. Palpatine was his everything. To serve someone else feels treasonous beyond the pale. The void awaits those who betray Palpatine. That much has always been clear. A void awaits traitors.
I only serve Palpatine.
Emperor Rax serves Palpatine too. Now go.
Tashu nods.
Yes. Yes, it makes sense. It's part of a plan, isn't it? A plan I couldn't see. Sidious always had a plan.
He cackles one last time, then hurries past the guard, lest the strange man change his mind at the last moment.
I am free at last.
Blast it! Nora is lost. The old gather house is a maze. She thought she could cut through the center and come out on the seaside facing the landing platforms. But this is an old building. Some of it is new, yes, but much of it was where the first settlers on Chandrilla gathered to sleep, to eat, to meet. They lived whole lives here. And this building was not all built at once, but rather one strata at a time. And now, Nora is wandering its channels, sure she's doubling back on herself. Oh, didn't she just see that light panel? That crack in the wall? That same painting of the first Polis meeting? She spins around, finds a door. She hasn't tried this one yet, has she? Nora hits the panel next to it with the heel of her hand. It shushes open, and Nora nearly runs into somebody.
You,
Nora says.
You,
Admiral Sloane says. Nora straight punches her in the face. Sloane is rocked, but recovers quickly, even as a line of blood crawls from her nose like a fleeing worm. The Admiral licks at the blood, then brings up a blaster rifle, firing it. But Nora rolls to the other side of the door, even as the air around her heats up, laser bolts popping craters in the far wall. This is it. This is her chance. All her anger and fear refines to a laser focus. Because, of course, Sloane is here. That monster did all of this. What Brenton did on stage was not his own action. It was Sloane. She's the puppet master pulling strings. A sudden sinkhole of regret opens up inside Nora's gut. Because if she had just done her job and killed this woman when she had a chance, none of this would have happened. At least she can finish what she started. Sloane comes through the door, rifle out. Nora drives her knee under the blaster, and the barrel of it whips back and catches Sloane in the face. The woman blinks, then ducks low and hard charges into Nora. It's like getting hit by a grav train. The movement carries her against the far wall, and her skull snaps back into the mortar, blasting new fireworks behind her eyes. Again, she sees Sloane point the rifle. Nora catches the barrel with her hands and points it away. More bolts take chunks out of the wall. Dust streams and flecks of stone rain into her hair and her eyes. She has no focus, and she feels dizzied. So all she can do is harness her anger and use brute force. A loud guttural cry is ripped out of her as Nora yanks the rifle from Sloane's grasp. It gives way with such force, it falls from her own hands, spinning away on the stone floor. She lunges after it, but she can't reach it. Sloane catches Nora's collar and pulls her back just as her fingers find the cold steel of the rifle barrel. The Imperial whirls Nora hard into the wall, then drives a flurry of hard punches into her side. One after another after another. Nora tries to fight against it, but she's not practiced at this. Not at hand to hand. And this woman attacks with the tenacity of an orbital strike.
I remember you, Sloane seethes. You should be dead. So should you.
Nora gasps, then whips her head to the side, ratcheting her skull against the other woman's chin. It gives her room to move, room to breathe, room to feel like she's not about to die. She doesn't rest long. Nora launches herself bodily at the woman. The Imperial meets her with fists up, absorbing every blow Nora throws. So instead, Nora goes for the dirty play. She stabs out with a foot and catches the Imperial Admiral in the knee. The leg goes backward, and Sloane cries out. Yet even that doesn't end it. Nora's head rocks, and she tastes blood as her lip splits under an assaulting fist. Another hit closes her eye behind fast-swelling bruise flesh. She throws her own clumsy fist, and Sloane ducks it, pumping a return fist into Nora's gut. She gags and staggers. Sloane grabs her by a hank of her ashen hair and bangs Nora's head into the wall once, twice, three times. Every time, she feels her brain rattle in her skull. Sharp shocks of light flashing as her teeth clack and her tongue tastes fresh blood.
I'm losing. I'm dying. I failed.
Stop right there!
A voice echoes down the hall. A woman's voice. And then the sound of blaster fire fills her ears. Nora drops, sliding against the wall, as Sloane bolts and Senate guards hurry after, firing their weapons. Sloane curses under her breath. She wasted too much time scrapping with that pilot. That woman is meaningless, and yet she stopped to fight her. Why? Anger taunted her, distracted her. Now she's on the run from guards in a building whose layout is labyrinthine. Her nose might be broken. One of her teeth is loose. Worst of all, she tried snatching the blaster rifle on the way past, but it spun out of her grip as the guards fired on her. And then, out of the gloom, comes one ray of light. She heads through a door and finds her way forward. A sky bridge leads out to the landing platforms. The platforms fill the distance, topping tall towers along the shore. Beneath them wait sand and stone and sea. Leaving this planet won't be easy. And at this point, she's sure there will be some kind of blockade in orbit. They'll be combing every mote of stardust for a sign of her. And if they capture her, they'll throw her in a lightless pit. She will never again see her empire, and Rax will be left to kick it farther into hell. But she has to try. If she leaves now, she may be able to seize on the chaos. They'll still be looking for her here, not there. She hurries across the skybridge, pulling off her imperial gray jacket as she runs, revealing the white undershirt beneath. The wind takes the jacket as she reaches the end of the bridge. It flutters away. A voice, then, carried on the wind. Someone calls for her.
Adia?
A foolish moment as she turns and looks to see who it is. It's that woman again. That damnable pilot. Nora something or other. Nora has the rifle. She fires. Sloane turns to run as the first bolt flashes past her ear. She can hear the hiss crackle as it goes by. The second digs a furrow out of the ground. The third blast doesn't miss. Her back arches as the shot takes her. Sloane spins like a child's top. The clouds above her, then the sea, and then she's falling off the skybridge. Her arms out, her fingers searching the sky for something to hold, but finding nothing at all. Darkness draws her down, down, down.